there is no failure. There is only feedback. So start, begin. The rest is easy to some extent.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Goldman, and this is Future Proof. I don't know about you, but I've been spending more time at home this year, which has made me highly cognizant of how reliant we are on physical spaces that are in need of being serviced on an ongoing basis. One company trying to disrupt the home services industry these days is HomeX, which is leveraging technology to create a quantifiably better experience for homeowners, whether it's virtually diagnosing home issues, providing step-by-step guidance to fix the problem, or helping to schedule a repair with a trusted local professional. The company's co-founder and CTO, Simon Weaver, has spent the last 20 plus years working with some of the world's biggest companies, such as Microsoft and Salesforce, to build distributed autonomous systems, such as the tech behind Amazon's Alexa. So I really wanted to talk to him about how his company is disrupting an industry that's probably needed disrupting for a while now. So Simon, welcome to Future Proof.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Thank you for having me, Jeremy.
Yeah, no, of course. I'd like to start everybody off with a nice softball. Who are you and what do you do on a day-to-day basis? How do you define your work?
So I'm Simon Weaver. As you said, I'm co-founder and chief technology officer at HomeX. And our focus on HomeX on a day-to-day basis is, as you say, reinventing the home services industry. A lot of that work is geared around thinking about what exists today. As you noted, the home services industry has been around for a pretty long time. You can actually go back to original plumbing from thousands and thousands of years ago. The original hollow pipe was invented in the early 1700s. And if you look at the inertia that sort of exists or the size of the machine that exists for home services, it really does need reinventing. The thing that we have is that we have a great deal of habit around how it's always been done. And so there are a couple of areas that we're really focusing on when we look at the marketplaces we see. It's a home services marketplace, ultimately. We have the provider side, the people that are supplying the services to the home, and then the consumer, the homeowner. And as you rightly pointed out, certainly since COVID has landed on us, we're using our homes in a very different way. The usage of homes has gone up by almost threefold. These are houses that were not engineered to be used in this way. And my belief is that on an ongoing basis, that we're actually going to fundamentally change how we act with our homes. And the goal of HomeX is to work out what that means and to provide the services necessary to enable you to live with your home in a different way.
Yeah, and I think building on that, I was curious, when you were taking a look at it, what were some of the home service industry's biggest problems that you identified that you said these are things that are ripe for potential disruption?
Oh, that's such a fun question. We could spend an entire day talking about that. One of the things that I really like to focus on, and it's always a fun question to ask people, is there anything that's wrong with your house right now? Is there anything that needs repairing? Is there anything that doesn't work? And the answer is universally, yes. And so what was really interesting to us is we spent a lot of late 2017 and 2018 just wallowing in it. One of the concerns that we have around, or one of the things that I don't really necessarily agree with in the technology industry, is folks have a tendency to jump straight into it. They try to solution straight away. And as I said, this is an old thing. Plumbing is very old. Drainage is very old. Electrical systems are very old. Even low voltage systems are now into their 30, 40 years old. We're talking about something that's been around for a long time. And we spent a lot of time thinking about it, as I said. And one of the things that really stuck out to us is that homeowners want to maintain their homes. They do. We have not quite a perfect analogy, but we have a decent analogy in cars. Cars are a depreciating asset. Your home's a generally appreciating asset, and your car is generally in perfect condition. It's serviced. It's absolutely glorious. It's pristine. Everyone's car's in great condition, more or less. But your home's an appreciating asset, yet you don't take care of it to the same length, to the same extent. And our fundamental question was, why is that? And it actually turns out that it's fear. It's complete terror. The first emotion that any homeowner, or the vast majority of homeowners, feel when something goes wrong with their house is absolute terror, because they don't know what to do. They have visions of getting ripped off. They have visions of someone coming, you know, over and not doing the right work or making it worse. They have visions of spending 2 hours on Google finding someone to come and help them. And that was our starting point from a consumer side, which is there's a fundamental fear of servicing the home. And why does that fear exist?
Okay, so then I want to ask you, I think, does it make it harder or easier to disrupt an industry using things like engineering and science when you're trying to reimagine a historically analog industry like home services? Because I think that some people just really looked at it and said, yes, you have this fear, but you've got to make some decisions. And then people just naturally made decisions without thinking, could you use science? Could you use technology to make the process better?
I think overall it makes it harder, but there's definitely two sides to that. There's definitely a bit of both in there. It's a fresh landscape to reimagine. Not all of these home services were born at the same time, but today we have a landscape of home services that exists. But we're also looking at, as I said, a giant beast, and it's going to take something giant to move that. And for us, what is the giant thing? What does that giant thing look like? And for us, it's definitely a technology problem. Actually, there's two significant problems that we'll see that I'll touch on in a second. But you don't take a massive industry like this and just change it overnight. I think there's incremental disruption here, if you like. The industry isn't ready for the end solution. And I actually think to some extent it would be hubris for us to say that we know what that looks like. I think we've got some ideas. I think directionally we get that. But we're going to get to where we need to get to with solving key problems. So what are the big two areas that I see? And they're quite contrasting, actually. You've got the notion of trust, which I think is the corollary of fear that we talked about earlier on. The home service industry is, let's just take the maintenance repair market. It's a little bit north of 400 billion. It depends who you ask. Some people say it's as high as 450. Some people say it's 380, but let's just call it 400 for the sake of argument. The largest player in that market, I won't tell you exactly what the number is, but they command less than 0.5% of the total market share. But that's not a bifurcated marketplace. That's not even fractured. It's completely shattered. There are 225,000 organizations in this country with less than, you know, 5 employees.
That's pretty amazing. I would just say, as somebody who, a lot of us spend our time thinking about like a duopoly or triopoly, and then you hear about markets like that, and there are markets that are where there's potentially a lot of opportunity to grab decent market share if you can provide something better and have less of a fragmented market, because I think that could very well lead to consumer paralysis, not unsure of how to make a decision.
Yeah, absolutely. If you've got that level of shattering, let's call it, how can you possibly expect to build trust with a consumer when there's absolutely no predictability in the marketplace? So that trust piece is the first big one. The second one, which is what was interesting to us, and it's more obvious in industries like medicine, but we have a massive diagnostics issue. We have a massive diagnosis issue in the industry. When you have something going wrong in your home, you're troubleshooting that issue. You're deciding whether you want an electrician. You're deciding whether you want a plumber. You're not calling a home services company to come and fix it for you. You've already started the troubleshooting process. Or you've already got sufficiently far through it to get someone to your home to help you. Hopefully you've got the right person. Sometimes it's pretty obvious. There's water pouring out of my ceiling. Okay. Nothing works. No electricity. Sure. But modern HVAC systems, modern split systems, you're talking about an HVAC engineer. You're talking about an electrician, potentially talking about a low voltage electrician. You're talking about a plumber. There's a lot that's going on there. And this responsibility that we've pushed onto, that has over time gravitated to the consumer, it seems wrong. And I don't know, how did that become a thing? It just seems it just seems insane that we would, that really exists. And was that an insight of ours? Was it straight in front of us? Who knows? But it looked fundamentally broken. And we believe it is fundamentally broken. And for us, technology, and particularly from a scientific standpoint, that's really where we see our focus.
So I think that when you're looking at this industry, why was, before you entered, why was the home services industry specifically broken for consumers and providers, really? Because I look at those as two, if you can provide a better experience for either one of those groups, then obviously you might have a chance at winning out in the market.
Yeah. And I think the experience is fundamentally, it's interesting. The experience is fundamentally broken for each of them in different ways, but also in an intersecting way. If you look at how we do things today, if you like, in the marketplace, it's a lot about lead distribution. It's not really about a marketplace for services. So there's a fundamental issue that exists in the middle. But let's talk about consumers first. There's obviously, it is a complicated thing to look after a home. Let's not try and trivialize it. It is difficult. And there are a lot of home services platforms and offerings, out there. Home services platforms out there, a lot of services out there. Each new service comes along and takes off an even thinner slither of functionality and turns it into a product and sells it to you. It's a confusing marketplace in terms of product for a consumer, for them to maintain something that's the most complicated thing that they have to maintain in their life. So what we're looking to do is really provide that, and I'm careful with the term end-to-end because it's got lots of connotations. We're looking for a complete experience for a consumer where they don't choose to troubleshoot. When something goes wrong with their home, they think of HomeX first, and we take care of it from that point all the way to the solution.
Yeah, it just strikes me also, one of the interesting things is we've seen a lot of direct-to-consumer e-commerce plays that have innovated in some fashion. And I think the difference is between a product and a service, and I'm definitely overgeneralizing here, but you get a product, you don't like the product, you can return the product. Basically, with just about every service, short of just giving a refund, you can't reverse the work that somebody did that might have been unsatisfactory. So it becomes, and I think that could be possibly why it's just so critical, not to mention the cost involved, but the fact that you can't go back in time and undo something. And that makes it such a critical decision to pick the right services and to figure out what you're going to do to improve where you're, now spending about 90% of your waking hours.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually, you touch on a really interesting point there. The model that exists for a consumer today is, I need someone to come and visit my house. There's something wrong in my home. I need someone to come and visit my house. And our service is about a solution. It's not necessarily about rolling a truck to someone's house. And I think that's a very important distinction. At the end of the day, we don't want to roll a plumber. We don't want to roll a plumber to a home to reset a garbage disposal unit. That doesn't make sense. That's a 30-second job. So what actually is the solution that we need to provide? If you think about us as a solutions company, if you raise it up a level, we're not a home services, company, we're a home solutions company. What is it that we're trying to provide? We're trying to provide a solution to the problem that is best suited to that consumer at that moment in time. Maybe it's a DIY article. This is how you reset your garbage disposal unit. Maybe it's a how-to video. Maybe it's a remote session with one of our technicians. We're getting huge resolution numbers with remote sessions because, and again, I think this is where COVID, if there's anything that's good that's come from it, this is advantageous for us, is that people are more willing to try to maintain their own home. And that notion of remote service for us is absolutely enormous. And then the final thing is, yeah, we roll someone out. We send over a technician and we solve it. We have that entire spectrum. And that's what we think of when we think about consumer solutions.
Yeah, I think that a lot of companies now, one thing that they're trying to do is to become more customer centric, which to me seems like a kind of obvious thing. Like, why do we even have a term for that? Because I don't know who wasn't customer centric if you were trying to build a business going back.
It's madness. You've got paying customers. We're not customer centric. Yeah, no, it's a mad metaphor.
Right. And that being said, since everybody's trying to really hone in on it and focus on that, I guess my question is, are there specific things that you did from a listening tour perspective to try to understand the customer pain point versus just looking at it from afar versus speaking to actual people? What are some things that you'd even recommend for other people if they're trying to innovate and disrupt an industry and go in and really listen to the customer? Or do you have any words of wisdom there?
That's a good one. I think it's, to some extent, that's the, it's the perennial question. How do you go in and change an industry? I think there's a certain degree of craziness that suggests that you can do that. Yeah, we're going to just wade on in here and we're going to change an industry. I guess the thing that we've really focused on is not being too clever and getting close to it. I think the point you raised about looking at it from afar rather than up close is it's a very good point. Some of the funniest comedians I know base their entire routine around observing the real world around them. They don't make anything up. In some ways, it's a parody on real life. And that power of observation is really what we harnessed, watching it happen, watching how people, from a technician standpoint as well, we've left technicians out a little bit. There's a huge opportunity there to improve that experience too. Watching both sides of the marketplace, but watching technicians and homeowners at the same time. How do they react with their home? How do they react with the software? How do they interact with it? What does their day look like? Little bit of a risk there. It's relatively straight. It's relatively easy to get anchored in what's already been done, but we were very intentional about going into that with our eyes wide open, which is we're not going to get anchored here. We're going to observe, we're going to learn, and then we're going to get very close to it. And then we're going to step as far away back as we can. And we're just going to throw crazy ideas at the wall. And I think, yeah, you just have to, in a lot of ways, all the answers are in nature. You got to go watch, you got to go learn. Insights come from observation.
Yeah. I think that it's a really good point that you just mentioned with the observation. And I think that in addition to that, I'm wondering what else might you recommend to entrepreneurs who are trying to identify broken experiences and industries that are ripe for disruption, like you're doing right now with HomeX?
I think advice for entrepreneurs.
An entrepreneur, I'll just say, is I think such a broad term, but obviously we're thinking just anybody who's an innovator who sees an opportunity they want to disrupt in some fashion. How do they go about doing it? I know folks like you and I have done this already, but I think there are people out there who they wouldn't know the first step necessarily, where to get started.
Yeah, where to get started. I think from an idea perspective, I don't want to say that ideas are a dime a dozen. But ultimately, the idea you start with is not going to be the idea you end with. It's going to, if you're lucky, it's going to be an evolution of that. It's potentially going to be something quite different. The initial idea might be part of the journey that you have to go on. And in fact, our journey has had a few of those where we've started with one belief, we've built something, we've tested it. It hasn't worked as we expected, and it's taught us something. And that's not failure, that's feedback. And I think that's a very key point for anyone who's inventing, is there is no failure. There is only feedback. So start, begin. The rest is easy to some extent. Pick an idea. If you identify an opportunity and you're clear around what the opportunity is, and don't be scared to spend time thinking about the opportunity. Don't be hasty to rush into it. You're not going to get it right first time, period. There it is. It's just there in front of you. You're not going to get it right first time.
I love that. I think that there are a lot of people who, when they think about how certain people can predict the future or invent the future in some way by creating a new market or disrupting something, I think that's one of the top things that people have in common, is that they're not dogmatic about the way in which they have to go solve it. They're going to listen to feedback from the market and they're going to adapt accordingly. So has there been any example like that you've had, even in your past life, but even since the beginning of HomeX, where you were approaching things a certain way, you got some feedback from the market or research or whatnot, and then you pivoted accordingly?
There's the arguably the most famous example in my career is the birth of Evie, which was her name before Amazon purchased the company. When I joined True Knowledge, as the company was at the time, we were a Q&A site. We were doing a single shot Q&A, come in, ask a question, get an answer. And that marketplace or that area was starting to become quite congested. And we were based in Cambridge, England. And we had to essentially pivot the company to the next phase. There were some fundamentals in the technology that we could use to create that. We coined the phrase conversational search. We believed that was a conversational paradigm that existed. And we went off and built this personal system, this artificial intelligence geared around the original technology. And it was necessary to do. It's interesting because a lot of people say, oh, you must have known you were inventing the future. It's, fuck no. We had no idea. We were just trying to race to the next. A startup is a thing that's dying on an ongoing basis. It's continually dying. It's continually burning money. We were racing to the next check, and we weren't going to get another check for building more Q&A. We were going to get a check for building something different. We didn't know what it was going to become. It was a very intense time. And to some extent, we were trying to survive. And I think to some extent, that's what entrepreneurship is.
Yeah. What trends, I think, just pivoting back to housing, like what trends are you following closely within the housing market that lets or gives you insight into how big HomeX can be and where the industry is going in general? Are there any particular trends that you're paying close attention to now?
Particular trends, that's an interesting question because we're observing changes in behavior. We are observing changes in how people live with their home, how people you know, interact with their home, how they feel about their home. It's a lot of the folks we talk to have, I think it's probably a little bit strong to say they've fallen in love with their home again, but they've realized that it's a space to live. It's not just a space to sleep, eat breakfast, leave, come home, eat dinner, and go to sleep. It's a space to interact with. And I honestly believe that COVID is going to have a profound effect on how we live with our homes going forward. Do I see it as a trend? What markers do I see? We've got some internal data that tells us that people are interacting with their homes a little bit different. But I think there's a dialogue that's happening, that's changing, that's shifting. Are people going to eat out as much? There's a couple of interesting things. If you go and buy gym equipment for your home, it's all gone. You have to go to some random auction site to get weights. The same thing we had to wait 3 months for a flour mill because people are investing in spending time in their homes now. And that's incredibly interesting for us. I think from the other thing that is the housing market itself, I have no idea. I think I'm one of a growing group of folks that are just sitting on the sidelines waiting around thinking, what on earth does the next couple of years look like in terms of the housing market?
It's funny, another hallmark that I've noticed in the people that I've interviewed in terms of who are better predictors of what's to come, ironically, it's the people who can say things I don't know, as opposed to always making a broad proclamation about something. And I was going to ask you, actually, as almost the last question, was about the housing market, because I know that there had been a trend, particularly amongst younger consumers, about renting versus buying and having like more of a transient lifestyle. And I don't have data at my disposal, but this is a thing that I've heard a lot of chatter about. And then it almost gets me thinking, I can see arguments that the pandemic might have made things move in one direction or the other, because you're spending more time in your home, you want to invest in it. But also, I do know a lot of people who uprooted from one part of the country to another to avoid the plague, essentially. And then if we're going to have more of those things in the future, do people want to be tied to one physical location? And I don't know if the answer is just buy a home, but put it on stilts so that you can wheel it to another locale. But it is an interesting thing to follow because there's almost like tailwinds in both directions.
Yeah. And actually, I know a lot of people in the software industry, and it's been very popular for tech companies to say, we're going to let everybody work from home and you can work from home forever now. And what you've seen is it's not a huge migration, but is a migration away from cities a little bit, or at least not focused or not geared around the commute to work. I think it's a lot of factors. I have no idea. Honestly, the next 24 or 36 months are going to be absolutely fascinating from a living perspective, from a working perspective. One small prediction is that I think we're going to see reduced work weeks actually in the office. I think companies are going to normalize on a place where you do 2 days a week or you do 3 days a week in the office and you do it with your team and there's overlap days. And, you know, that the standard 5 day a week in the office, I think is going to dissolve. I think I think the days of the 5 day work week, the classic 5 day work week in the office are numbered.
Especially in person, I'll say that's definitely true. I know when I started my agency, we almost by accident had 2 days where we were all together and 3 days when we were apart. And it worked well because you had your focus time and you also had your time for the ability to build relationships and do that whiteboarding and that type of work that only happens when you're face to face. So like you said, I think it'll be interesting to follow. And I think we're going to get more data in essentially, which will let us have a better sense of where things are going because there are too many unknown variables right now. But I think one thing that will definitely remain constant is the fact that we need physical spaces to congregate in and live. And we want to feel nice and comfortable and be able to make good decisions to live in those places. Yeah, thank you so much, Simon. I think this is really an interesting topic to be continued.
Yeah, absolutely. Jeremy, thank you very much. That was great.
Thanks again to Simon for making the time. I got to say, I think I probably did not even think about half of those topics as much before we started rolling, but the importance of the home and the ability to feel confident in all the decisions you're making to have a place where you can actually focus on now your work as well as your non-professional life is crucial. If you like what you just heard and this is your first time here, be sure to subscribe. Apple Podcasts, Overcast, Stitcher, the choice is yours. And if you're a longtime listener, please remember to rate and review Future Proof, as that's the number one way we get this show in front of people like you. Special thanks this week to associate producers Jason Stack and V. Cortuccio. Once again, I'm Jeremy Goldman, and you've been listening to Future Proof.